We have a community that lacks value because we don't add value to our community. And so this is why I always tell people that we need more me's. Not because I'm special, but because I take it as a personal mandate to add value to the community, not just extract value from the community, to teach, to help, to educate. And if we had everybody taking their skills and their abilities, whatever that might be, and putting it into the community, we wouldn't need anybody else. We wouldn't need white folks to do nothing for us. We wouldn't even need their money, because quite honestly, like, if we had the talent and the skills, we can get the stuff done. And so I just want to challenge people to take whatever your skill set is, whatever your education is, whatever your degree is in, and figure out a way to give it back to your community.
Welcome to The Culture's Money. The Culture's Money is a podcast created to discuss how we multiply the $1.2 trillion in spending power possessed by the American Black community through the vehicles of investing, personal finance, ownership, networking, and most importantly, collaboration. We are the culture, baby, and we are the financing that we've been seeking. Now, let's get into this money talk. And here's your host, Jamal Vitos.
All right, welcome back, culture members. This is another episode of The Culture's Money. I, of course, am your host, Jamal Vitos, but some of you may know me on other social media platforms as Leo Grand Prince, but however it is that you know me, I hope you know me to be an advocate for financial literacy, entrepreneurship, investing, and generational wealth. I normally bring you guys special guests, but this one is the specialist of all specials, because it's the last guest of 2020. But more than that, I believe it's my first real friend I ever made on Twitter. And we started off just talking about random, you know, thoughts we were having about investing. And that turned into him initiating an investment club that would go on to become Todd Capital. And that would branch off to Todd Capital Real Estate, Todd Capital Acquisitions. Then my man branched off into digital courses, and he just keeps doing awesome things. I've seen him go through so many transitions in the 5 years that we've known each other. And I would definitely call us a friend, even though we haven't never met in person as of yet, but we're going to change that. But I've seen him transition from finishing law school. I've seen him go on to become a father. I've seen him to become the first of a group. I have successful friends, but he is the first one that I've actually seen make themselves a millionaire in my own vision, in my own eyes. So I would like y'all to welcome Todd Millionaire to the show, aka Charles Oglesby.
It's lit.
It's lit.
We out here, man.
You out here, bro. When I say, your story just touches me, one, because I saw it happen, which really, I think it touches me in a profound way, because I actually see, you know, when you meet people, they're successful, so you hear the war stories, but I actually went through some of the initial process with you, with the marketing and investing club, and to see you just flourish, man, when I say, I have nothing but, it's nothing but inspiration for me, like, you inspire me to do more.
What's interesting is I feel like that's the beauty of social media, and that's the beauty of kind of not hiding what you're doing and what you've done. I take that from Chris. Chris, he inspires a lot of us. And so I just kind of post and kind of follow what he's doing. And as I share things, it's so funny, because when I did cross that $1 million level, like, everybody's perspective changed. Like, now people started to see that it was possible for them. So it was like, it was a win for me, but it was also a win for the culture, because we get so much told about how America is not for us. America's holding us back. And then you see somebody who's never had that mentality push through to the other side. And it's like, okay, my name is Paris Millionaire now. My name is Sierra Millionaire now. My name is this Millionaire now. Raphael's looking at life different. So it's just, it's a great time to be on social media, I would say.
And the beautiful part about yours, and I know right now manifestation is such a trendy word, but I always kind of parse back and tell people that manifestation is a precursor to the execution. I know, man, you always talk about execution. You can manifest a lot of things, but without the execution, there's nothing. You're throwing stones and hoping to hit anything. So how do you feel about the execution and how that keeps on building for you?
So none of this even is possible without execution. I don't even really like to use the term manifestation as much as I just use faith. I grew up in a faith-based household. I grew up in a prosperity preaching and believing household. And so for me, I just always knew what I was working towards. But you can't get to what you want if you're not doing the work. And so a lot of people, they're like, I'm manifesting what I want, and they're just chilling. Mm-hmm. They're taking trips, they're taking vacations, they're spending money on brand names. And I always knew that I wanted to get there, but I knew I wasn't going to get there by maxing out on credit cards, getting it from my job, trying to get a raise, using paid time off. And so I always told people, like, I know the life I want. I just know that I'm going to get there through ownership and investing. Because if you actually look at the life that you want and then you backtrack it, it's not a lot of employees there. And so for me, like, I'm working, I'm calling myself, calling those things that be not as though they were, and just kind of getting to it. But I always had my eye on what I wanted. I knew that I was taking the right steps, because this entire time I'm studying, I'm researching, I'm asking questions, I'm working internships, I'm getting around the right people. And that's the process that gets you there. The process isn't just the belief. It's the work and the mindset that gets you to that quote manifestation.
The dopest part I think about you is, like, as I've seen you progress through this this journey, I constantly see you post about the luxury things that you want to buy, but they're never impulse buys. You're always talking about, oh, once I do this, I'm going to buy this Rolly, or once I do this, I'm going to buy this car. Talk about the discipline of saying, I'm using the luxury as a goal, for as a reward for me reaching a goal.
I think it kind of stems down to assets buying luxuries. And so I always want to put an asset before a luxury. I don't just want to make cash and then blow the cash on luxury. So it started from even just the car. Before I bought the car, I made the money in the stock market to buy the car. Before I bought the watch, I made the money in the stock market to buy the watch. Or I might even set up some sales goals, because a lot of times people don't realize, like, a business is still an asset. So if I take business income and I buy something that's luxurious, I still put an asset in between me and that. What you don't want is to take hours of your life and then convert it to depreciating things, because your life is invaluable. And so I think it keeps you motivated. I'm always kind of trying to do different things that's going to make me work a little bit harder, think a little bit harder, research a little bit harder, sacrifice a little bit harder, instead of just taking the easy route. Like, I'm always trying to challenge myself and push myself further, because I feel like that's how you grow. And so the goal is growth. I was listening to somebody, and he was talking about, like, and it's something I've always believed in. And Daryl Drake, he posted a house, huge house. And he was like, who here has ambition or vision to reach this point? And he's like, if you don't, you should, but not just to get the stuff, but for the person that you'll become in order to get that stuff. Mm. And so for me, I'm setting it up so I can become the kind of person that makes $40,000 in stocks. Because I can repeat that. I can't repeat going to work and giving you 40 hours, 50 hours, 60 hours. But I can repeat the thought process that made me $40,000 in stocks over and over and over again. And I think I've done that, because now we've far surpassed the 40,000. Mm-hmm. We are at about maybe like $250,000 in gains, not principal gains. And so those little tricks actually elevate you further and propel you further. It's not even about the stuff. And that's why putting assets following your luxuries are the best way to do it. Because let's say, for example, I'm like, okay, well, until I buy an apartment complex, I'm not buying a Bentley. I can get the Bentley, but buying an apartment complex is going to teach you so much. Now I'm talking to lenders. Now I'm learning how to send over offers. Now I'm learning how to do due diligence. Now I'm learning how to fly out and get all these things done. And now I turn 12 units into 100 units. And so, yeah, I'm using these material things to motivate me to actually become a better investor, a better business person, and a better person altogether.
And you're saying so much right there. And I think it falls on hollow ears. I'm sure you see it. I definitely see it. When you tell people it's about the process, it's about the systems, it's not always about money. I say this all the time, that if money is your only end goal, you're losing, because it should be more than just the monetary gain. Yes, there's real value in, you know, the liquid capital and everything. But I was telling someone the other day, I said, if money's the end thing and you have no power, then you're missing half the equation. It's like there's assets and power and ownership. And the fact that you think, why do you think people are so, I don't want to say resistant, but they're not willing to dig into the process and the system? Why is it always the instant gratification?
I think they just don't know any better. I really do. I was thinking about this today and I was like, man, like, if people knew how much money you can make in one day off of having a bunch of money in the stock market, they wouldn't be blowing all their money on dumb stuff, because there's days I wake up and I made $10,000 in the stock market. I make $10,000 a day in the stock market. And so Gumroad money, we've had some good Gumroad days. Gumroad allowed us to make a lot of money, but the money that I make in stocks now, if I were to give it a year, if I made $10,000 every single day for the whole year, I made $2 million. And there's going to be some up days, some down days. And so the thing is, I think it's the easy stuff. It's like, we all know how to get in shape. You diet and you exercise. Now, for some reason, we want to take the shortcuts when it comes to wealth. And so we're like, well, we just need reparations. And so I kind of consider it this wealth mentality where I want everything, but I don't want to give up anything. And I've never taken that approach. And so I don't take that approach to anything I'm associated with, whether it's building wealth, whether it's buying a home. We didn't buy this home with the FHA loan. We have no PMI. I don't lean on anybody to make it easy for me. In fact, I kind of enjoy it being more difficult because you're better for it. I have a friend who was very, very good at NBA 2K. This guy's a superstar. He might be listening to this podcast right now. But what I realized is he never played it on the easy level. He only played it on the hardest level. And he always played it on the hardest level. And if you get used to playing on the hard level, now you can beat everybody around you. And now you have those skills that nothing really can be thrown into your way and stop you. And so I would just say that for some reason, as a culture, we're taught this welfare mentality. We're taught this. It has to be easy. You see it. You tell somebody like, oh, we could all become a millionaire. We could all do this. Well, that's not that easy. It's not that easy to start a business. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy to do whatever. It's like, why we always got to do the easy stuff all the time? Like, let's learn how to do some hard stuff. Let's become great at doing hard stuff, because you become great at doing hard stuff, it stops being as hard. Mm-hmm. So the stock market is always on hard mode. There ain't no easy mode in the stock market.
Never, bro. Never. Never.
And so it's like, you got to grow. And I mean, there's great rewards on the other side of that. And I feel like a lot of us are a testament to that. But the thing is, and this is why I think what Chris and I have done is so powerful, is if all you get is money, all you can do with that money is spend the money. Mm. But we did all this through investing and saving, and the knowledge of investing and saving and building wealth. And so what do we do when we got a bunch of money?
Make more money.
Right. All we do is make more money. I enjoy the process of making money, all my money, than just spending it. So it's like, I tell somebody, like, what I spend pales in comparison to what I invest. Like, we're not even focused on that stuff. I'm over here, like, I was actually in the process of about to go buy a truck so I can get that on the road and generate some income. I already got a rental car on the way to get that on the road, generate more income. I got an offer on a 12-plex. I'm buying a duplex. I'm rehabbing a duplex. Like, we got money, and all we did is become even bigger investors. And that's why you got to focus on the process, because you don't want to just get the end result. There's a lot of people who all they know how to do is make money and spend it. And you see it as evidenced in life. Like, they don't know how to do nothing with money but spend it. And that's the problem, because you'll perpetually be working for money if you don't learn how to make money work for you. I was able to leave the job, not just because of the money we have on the side, because of the money that we're making all the time, like all the time. And then also the things that I've created with my mind. And so I've been able to create income, passive income, just from the thoughts that I have. And so that's powerful in itself. But yeah, I mean, whatever we're doing and while we're doing it, it's not working.
And you said so much there. And I think the key point is, like, do it the hard way. And I think about it in reference when people are talking about, I don't have the money to start the business. Good. Start it anyway. That way, when the business grows or you try the next venture and you have enough and you have a little bit of capital, you know how to do things a little bit better because you did it with nothing. So imagine what you could do with a little bit of resources. And I think you are right. We are stuck in this mentality of people see the obstacles before they even see the potential. And I know, man, you have both read this book. I think I actually got it as a recommendation from you about the obstacle being the way. People sometimes think, oh, with the all the things you don't have is the reason why you shouldn't do it. No, bro. That's what you should be building it on.
100%. Sometimes I read books and it shapes my mentality. And I'm like, man, I wish other people could read these books, because it really, every single thing that people tell you on Twitter, I'm sure you've received it, where you post something and then you got to deal with all the detracting comments. Mm-hmm. It's like, man, if you just understood that everything you're saying is actually just, like, not really as difficult as you're saying, we would accomplish so much more.
I don't know if you, like, saw it. I think for October, I said that we were making $20,000 this month. Like, compared to the things I've seen you and Chris making a month, to me, that was a reachable goal. Well, at least for me, what I was doing. And I almost made it. I mean, when the month was over, I made like 18 and some change, right?
Wow.
But But like you said, I had set my mind to it, so I was there. But the people who retweeted it talking about where we, like, where they doing that at, or what's the scam, or y'all up here, or what they say, Forex Twitter added again. I'm like, bro, is y'all mentality that void? Are y'all that much, is your mindset that much in hell that you can't believe that you can make that much money in a single month?
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people just need to shut up and just let us lead. Like, it doesn't, like, I understand they probably think that they're qualified to have these comments, but if you don't got the results, you really can't justify whatever qualifications you say you do have. And I think we'd be a lot further ahead if we didn't allow everybody to just speak for the culture.
Bro, everyone has an opinion with no crown.
Right. But going back to what that's one of the principles that, I mean, it's not even something I made up. It's something I kind of took from Grant Cardone. It's like, if you aim high, even if you don't miss that mark, 18 grand in a month is good bread, man.
Bro.
A lot of people wish they were making 18 grand a month, and you still got your day job too. So
right. Like, so that was, to me, I was like, yo, this on to me, it was added paper. It's like, yo, I'm already making a decent salary. This is just me getting to the point where it's kind of like, I'm getting to that point kind of like you, where I'm itching, where it's like the side hustles are getting so big. It's like, Jamal, eventually it's going to be time to quit that job. So like, that's the mentality I'm building to. So
Before we go on, though, I saw James, he mentioned something earlier, and he was talking about how, like, if you don't have $1,000 stash, you shouldn't be out here dating. And he was getting a bunch of comments like, $1,000 is too much money, blah, blah, blah. I was like, man, how are we going to close the wealth gap if we think $1,000 is too much money?
I definitely saw that. He was like, you shouldn't be dating. And I definitely agree. You should be in some form of financial security before you start looking to build with someone. But the fact that $1,000, come on, man, you probably have lost thousands of dollars in the stock market depending where it was swinging that day, and y'all telling me $1,000 is too much?
Yeah.
Like, y'all out here, like, I've heard things, y'all can scam the federal government, but $1,000 is too much money.
I think my thing is like, we all know that folks aren't just sitting in destitute poverty.
Yeah.
They're making money and they're spending it to look like they have money. Mm-hmm. And so they're spending it on taking trips, taking pictures, new sneakers. And if we became committed to wealth building and we just said, I'm not doing none of that stuff until I am there. And that's what I did. I was like, I'm not doing that stuff. It's not that I couldn't do it. It's just, it just made sense for me to stack and build and invest and learn instead of going on that rat race, that wheel. All you're doing, you're going on a wheel. You make money, you spend it, and now you just got to keep being on the wheel. So if you do what we are doing and have done, you can get yourself off that wheel, and now you don't work for money anymore. Now your money works for you. And I felt like, I was like, that's the true epitome of what the book says. The rich don't work for money. The rich have money work for them. And so we wake up, the money works for us, we decide what we want to do, and we just live our lives.
Talk to me about, I saw you and the wife bought a house. Congrats on that. And, you know, I know you've been in the real estate game for a while, like, you know, the real estate club, you know, buying, rehabbing, everything. But talk to me about how much powerful it was when you got to buy the house that you wanted to provide for you and your family at the closing table. Tell me about that mindset.
Man, that's a very broad, because it's all encompassing. But man, I would just say it was like, we had been trying to do it for a while. Mm-hmm. And I would say, first and foremost, that there definitely is power in having a wife, because sometimes you might want to take a shortcut. And so it's like, I could have been bought a house, but we bought the right house. We bought a brand new house from the ground up in a great community, in a growing community around a bunch of just everything is brand new. We didn't have to sacrifice and go and buy in Moreno Valley or buy in Beaumont. We bought a house where we wanted to buy a house. And so like, sometimes when your wife tells you no, it's actually a blessing on the other side of that no. And a lot of people, they're like, I don't want anybody telling me no. I'm grown. I know what's going on. And sometimes I could feel that way too. But because we didn't have two people that agreed on where we should go, we got a better win when we did have both of us on board. And so the house buying process just flew by. We'd already tried like 2 years ago. And so we were already pre-qualified. We already knew what we were qualified for. And so we already had a plan in place when we did approach them. So that worked. And then, of course, it's like when you have a family, you have a son, you want them to have space to grow. And we ran an apartment. And granted, it was a pretty big apartment, but it just was not enough for all three of us. And then if we decide to have another one, it was definitely not enough for four of us. So that played a part. And yeah, just kind of strategically trying to figure out how we were going to do it. Because I don't know if you guys know this, but Chris, he bought a house for about the same price and he paid cash for his house. And so this is why it's important to be a person of value, because a lot of the strategy that went into this was me and Chris just talking about it through DMs. Chris was like, oh, so you're making this money, you're going to buy a house, what are you going to do? And I told him, I was like, well, I think my strategy is to do this way. And he was telling me his strategy about buying his house. And so we kind of masterminded and brainstormed on this whole house buying process. And so what I did is we put down a significant down payment, and then I put the other half of the money into SPG. And so SPG pays my mortgage. SPG kicks me out about $5,500 a quarter in dividends.
Y'all heard it here. This is free game. You can't get nowhere else.
And so that's another reason why I knew I didn't have to go back to work, because my housing expense is taken care of. And so we always talk about house hacking, mm-hmm. but I always tell people that financial education is like a life hack. And so there's a lot of ways to get to where you want to go if you understand finance. And so that's what we did. The SPG, instead of paying off the house, now I use the dividends to pay off the house. And guess what? I still keep that money I would have used to put into the house. So let's say that number was $300,000. $300,000 goes into there. The gains on that $300,000 pay off the $300,000. I still keep it $300,000. And so now we all happy. Passive income, freedom, all off of financial education. And so one of the benefits that I have that a lot of people who work in my field of law have is I didn't get an undergrad degree in BS. A lot of them, they have an undergrad degree in something that just got them to law school. Mm-hmm. And now they have nothing to fall back on. All they have is law school. But
shout out to them finance degrees.
Right. So I think that is a blessing. I always tell people, like, I got a battery in my back when my son was born, and we just had to get it. And it's a blessing, because I feel like when you don't have that, you can tend to look at everybody to the side of you. You can look at what they're doing, what they're building, and what their opinions are, what they say, and that could hold you back. That could slow you up. There's a reason why they put blinders on the horses, and having a son put the blinders on. I couldn't even see what they were doing, which allowed me to focus and get a lot further ahead than I thought I could. I have a friend who, he had kids really young, and he actually didn't finish college, but he was still making so much more money than a lot of us who did finish college. But he had three kids. And I realized, like, when you have a child, you got to get it by any means. And so I'm glad to say that it paid off. And I think I earn more money than them now. So having my son allow me to even that pace, because I can't be letting people out earn me.
This part of all of this really is, it kind of comes into me and you, and then how I see the way you interact with Chris. It's like, and it really is that people, like having people around you who inspire to do you better. I've never seen jealousy between the way you and Chris interact, and hopefully I've never exuded any jealousy towards you as I've seen you excel. And the mentality of that is just so special. Like, it takes a special type of person to see the people around them winning and think of it as motivation, as opposed to, you know, they don't want to see you better than them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that it's dangerous to do that, because somebody who is successful and powerful, you want mm-hmm. them on your side, not against you. And so it's important, because they know some things and they have some power. And so I'd rather have that power working for me than working against me. And so, like, that's why I never outshine the master. I'm always defer to the master. I'm always put the master on, because I know that I'm going to still win. Like, you can even outdo other people and still give them glory. Like, you don't got to be like humility. I'm not a fan of humility, but I am a fan of not stepping mm-hmm. on the people who helped me get to where I'm going. And so it's like, even like with my parents, like, I have more money than my parents. And like, I'm not over here sunning them, over here talking to them crazy. Like, nah, like, it's to my parents. And I feel like that's the way it should go. It's like, you should, there's nothing wrong with showing respect to people. Like, I don't think that showing respect necessarily means that you're beneath somebody. You can still be their peer. And I think that Chris kind of sees me as his peer, but I'm never going to, like, especially after all I've learned from him, try to kind of like big up on him, because people have done that to me. People have mm-hmm. done that to me, and I've had to cut them off, and I wish them well. But they got to know that my old ideas, the ideas that got me here, aren't going to get me there. So if you're executing on the ideas that you took me over there, you can't get to where I'm really going. You might not even be able to get to where I was. So, like, we just continue to level up. I'm over here just focused on, like, what's the next goal? I'm trying to hit 10. I'm trying to hit 100. I raised my unit goal. At first, I was aiming for 20 units. Now I'm like, I got to get 100 units. And then who knows where we go from there? I might be aiming for 1,000 units, but I got to get my 100 units first. I know 100 units is easy.
And the best part about you is, like, I've seen this going on. Like, you've never changed how you interacted with people. And I'm going to speak from a personal experience. Like the same way, I think I said this on one of your podcasts, the same way you responded to my text before, like you hit the goals, is the same way you respond to them now. Like it hasn't blown your head or ego up. You know, your goals have gotten bigger. Your drive has gotten harder, but you're still, you know, like you said, you still treat people with the same respect. And I think that is so dope because so many people get money and then all of a sudden, I don't want to say they necessarily forget where they've come from, but they stop interacting with people at a decent civil level. And I just wanted to point out that that's definitely never the vibe that you've ever given.
Yeah, I feel like I put out a tweet about this earlier and I was like, the goal is to get wealth for like power and freedom. Like I wanted to be free. I always tell people like I got fired from a lot of earlier jobs. And this is after I graduated from college. Like before college, it was like whatever. And so you graduate from college and you think it's about to be gravy and you start losing jobs that you feel like you're qualified or overqualified for. And it lights a fire up inside of you. And so for me, I just wanted to never feel that again. I never wanted to have this lifestyle. Because, I mean, you get these good jobs, you start improving your lifestyle, you move into a nice apartment, you start plotting on getting a new car, you get better suits, you're going out to dinner, going out to lunch, you're living this great lifestyle, and then somebody just rips the rug from underneath your feet. That whole lifestyle is gone, and in actuality, now you're in fear, you're in panic mode, because you're trying to figure out, like, okay, not only am I going to have to decrease this lifestyle, I don't even know if I'm going to be able to live here anymore. I might have to actually move back home with my parents, that kind of stuff. And so I never wanted to experience that ever again, so I wasn't building wealth to be better than anybody. I wasn't doing all this to be better than anybody. I was doing this for freedom. I was doing this for security. I was doing this so that I could like work a job because I want to. I could leave a job because I want to. And I never wanted people who I didn't think were better than me to act as though they're better than me just because they have the role as manager. Like Dame Dash, who's like, they don't even own it. And they're out there trying to sun you. Like real bosses see the value in me because I have a boss mentality. I do not have an employee mentality. So a manager is going to look at me and say like, he doesn't fit the employee role that we're trying to stick him into. But I've always had good connections with the actual bosses. That's what I've always looked up to. But still, I had to go out and build my own.
Now, how do you weed out? Because now, you know, you've proved your thesis. People know that you made the money. And how do you weed out the people who now coming with you, I got an idea, or can you peep me on? How do you weed out those people who you can tell or just trying to use you for a come up or just trying to sell you a half-baked idea?
I think a big part of it is if they've done the work before they came to me. So if they have already started something, if they already have like a concept, they've already been talking to maybe wholesalers or suppliers, if they've already been like in the game, in the space, it's a different conversation. But I get some people who like send me links and send all that other stuff and I just dismiss it. I'm not even focused on it. Like if I can't tell like that you actually are serious and that you will be doing this with or without me, that's a problem. And so that's true even with like interns or people who say, I want to come work for you. Like, well, have you been doing the work? All the admins, every single admin who was an admin for the options community was doing the work before they got an admin title. And so that's a lesson for other people, not even just in working with me, but just in life. Like, do the work before you get paid for the work. Even if you want to work with somebody, you want to network somebody. Like with Chris, I was helping Chris before Chris started helping me. I was helping Andre before I started helping me. I help other people and I do it just because I want them to win because I exist in abundance. It's never even like a ploy. I'm not over here like trying to get put on. Mm-hmm. It's just I genuinely want to see people win. And so it's just, I don't know why I'm that person. Maybe it's how I was raised. But I would just say that you need to be giving and giving to a lot of people and giving without expecting a return.
No, that's definitely true. And I feel like that's kind of how my consulting stuff kind of started. It was like, well, you saw it. We would talk about random stuff when investing on the timeline just for free. Like nobody was getting paid at that point. It was just what we were talking about, what we were interested in. And right. That went over into the investment club. You weren't getting paid. Charles reeled me in. Like he gave me jobs that I was kind of already doing. I was like, this is the market research on this stock. And he was like, do it. Send out the emails, all of that. Like, so it's like you were doing the work and you kind of just slid into those positions. And that works so well because if you're constantly coming to people with your handout or with the vibe that, oh, I want to get close so some of the, you know, gold dust can run off on me. People have a sense for that. I always feel like people with good business acumen, we also have a good vibe acumen. It's like we know when people are just trying to use or just trying to get freebies or just trying to get the resources or the network that you have. And it's very important not to burn those bridges trying to be a taker off top.
I think the thing is there's no such thing as wasted work. So let's say, for example, you did something to try to figure out if it was going to allow you to get in that space with somebody. It might just earn you a follow. You might not even get in the door, but you might get a foot in the door. You might get a toe in the door, and you're further then than you were before, because now you have actually some sort of proof that what you're doing got their attention. So sometimes I'll just get a follow. I mean, even the podcast. Like, I don't get paid for the podcast to a certain extent, but the podcast allows me to make great connections with great people that might not even manifest for another 2 years. I was talking to Pocky about this stuff, and we're about to start doing some different projects. But like, Pocky has like a 200, 300,000 follower page, and we just have our personal cell phone numbers, all because I put together a platform that's going to get them more sales, that's going to get them more exposure, is going to allow them to bring more people into their circle. And so the thing is, and I always tell people, is we have a community that lacks value because we don't add value to our community. And so this is why I always tell people that we need more me's, not because I'm special, but because I take it as a personal mandate to add value to the community, not just extract value from the community, to teach, to help, to educate. And if we had everybody taking their skills and their abilities, whatever that might be, and putting it into the community, we wouldn't need anybody else. We wouldn't need white folks to do nothing for us. We wouldn't even need their money, because quite honestly, like, if we had the talent and the skills, we can get the stuff done. And so I just want to challenge people to take whatever your skill set is, whatever your education is, whatever your degree is in, and figure out a way to give it back to your community. Because if you aren't, then you're no better than the people who are trying to extract value from your community. You can't point at them and say, oh, they out here oppressing us, but you ain't doing nothing to liberate us.
No, that's a bar.
You ain't doing nothing to actually like put somebody else on. So I lead by example. I don't tell anybody to do anything that I'm not either doing or willing to do. And a lot of these things are things I've been doing for a long time. And I don't know why I have to beg people to do these things. So I just don't get it.
Let's go to you. I heard you say you recently just left a job. Congrats on that. Like, just talk about the mentality of how it was building the business on the side while still doing the 9-to-5. Because I used to love your tweets. You used to be tweeting about the manager said this. Man, you don't know, I just made such and such on the vending machine. So I made this much in the market. I came here voluntarily. You don't know I'm about to quit. So how is that to get to the point where, like you said, you got the house and the house pays for itself? Like, talk about the overall experience of doing that.
Yeah. I would say that everything I've kind of done was because I just know how white people are, man. Like, I'm one of the most educated people that I know. I don't know too many people that have a JD MBA. I don't know anybody that has a JD MBA. And for me to not be getting the compensation that I felt that I was worth was a problem. And so what I did is I started building the compensation myself on the side. And so at first, it was really just me getting paid what I felt like I was worth. So I graduated from law school. I had a free internship that I paid into a part-time job that I turned into a full-time job. And then I was like, you know what? Based on my education and what I'm doing here, I deserve a raise. And so I came to the guy and I was like, hey, I want a raise. He didn't give me a yes immediately. And it was probably because he had to run it up the chain of command, because this is a family business. And so you had the dad who I was working with, who was actually like the owner of the company. And then you had his son, who it actually kind of was his company. Like, they did it together, which is what you should be doing. And that's kind of my goal here. But so I think he just had to go ask his son and make sure it was okay. But I didn't take it like that. I took it personal, like Michael Jordan. And so I was like, you know what? It's time for me to launch out. And so I started a consulting company. I think this came off of me reading the book Rich 20 something. And so I started a consulting company and I just started filing LLCs on the side. And I was doing that and I was getting maybe like between 2 and 4 clients a week. And so I was charging them like $250 to do an LLC. And so I was getting like between $500 and $1,000 each week. And that turned out to be about an additional like $3,000 to $4,000 per month. And I was like, all right, so I gave myself a raise. And so it allowed me to take my wife to lunch, do all things I need to do, look into getting a car, but it also allowed me to start building a brand of something that I was monetizing and not just something I was giving away for free, because I still was doing the investment club and that was fun and I was building that. But then one day I decided I don't want to work at that firm anymore. And I actually wanted to get like actual law firm experience. And so what I did is I just quit the job cold turkey. But the cool thing is I still took my part-time side hustle with me. And so a lot of people, they don't realize, like, if you build something on the side, that thing is mobile. It's not like a job. I don't got to start from zero again. And so I took that part-time side hustle, and I took that with me to the law firm that I was working in downtown LA. And so I was running that, building it. And all this time, we're still buying rental properties. We're still investing in other ventures and doing that kind of stuff, investing in the stock market. And so, I mean, I had actually planned to quit my job and not go back before I came to this other firm 2 years ago. But my wife was like, you need to go back to work. So I went back to work and I listened to her, and which was kind of a good thing because it allowed us to get this house. So wives are smart.
I'm trying to be like you, bro. You talk about your wife and good life input all the time. I'll be listening and taking notes.
A lot of my blessings flow from my wife. So I'm not even going to lie. A lot of people see me and they're like, oh, Charles killing. It's like, nah, Charles's family is killing it. This is a family thing. So what happened? And so then I was just working and building and came across, I was just started doing Gumroad, man. And I was realizing that owning things is cool, but selling things is actually like going to really take you to where you need to go, especially given the social media reach that we have. And so I started realizing, like, man, these companies that make a lot of money, they make a lot of money because they sell things. And so this is why I was telling people, like, we got to, like, all the time going up, I thought, like, ownership matters. And it definitely does. But selling products and selling widgets, your money is unlimited. And so I saw it with Chris. I saw it with this girl named King Ashley. She sells digital products. I was watching this one girl. She was selling digital courses and she was making millions. I saw it working one-on-one with Terry because I was an affiliate for her course before I launched my own. And Terry became a millionaire like that year. And I was just watching. I was like, okay, this is why you got to get close to people, even if it just looks like working for them, because you're going to learn. And so then I launched my stuff. And I'll never forget, I've been seeing the success, and I was seeing that usually I would get the most success when I ran a Friday sale. And we had a Friday sale and I got out the car. I was like, I'm gonna make $1,000 today. And for me, making $1,000 in a day was like, what? And so I ran the sale and I made $2,000 that Friday. And I felt like I was a man. I was like, what? You can't tell me nothing. I made $2,000 in a day, man. And then from there, I just been duplicating the process. And then I found certain products that are more, mm-hmm. I guess, marketable. And so the options course is the one that really took it off. And the reason why the options course, and this is why you got to kind of be on your toes. You can't be so dead set in what you have going on. And so, like, I saw people were having success in the course, and I was honestly afraid to promote that course because we all know options can be risky. And so people were like, man, I just made $1,000. I just made $2,000. And you know what I did? I took it and I screenshot it and I used it as marketing and advertising. And in the beginning, I wasn't using their screenshots. What I started doing is I was using my own screenshots. I was like, all right, I got these things. I can't just like post it and say, buy it. I got to post the results of what's been happening, even if it's just my results. And so I posted it and I posted my results underneath it. And I started realizing I was getting more traffic. Another thing that happened is Chris took the course. And so when Chris took the course, I was kind of scared. I was like, oh man, Chris taking my course. And then he took it and he started having some success. He started posting it. He became an affiliate for me. He started promoting and advertising it. That made a bunch of money. And then just running into the this pandemic, man. The pandemic was definitely a comp as well. Mm-hmm. So like a lot of people at home getting this free stimulus money, they were just throwing into courses. And so I'm not the only person that came up during the pandemic. You see Neo, you see Him 500, you see everybody. Anybody who really had a digital product to sell, they're coming up because that's what the world kind of pivoted towards, is we're getting out of the reach. Like, you have people who can't go to a vacation if they wanted to. You have people who couldn't go on a shopping mall if they wanted to, couldn't go to a restaurant if they wanted to, couldn't go to a basketball game if they wanted to. And what they have, time and money. And what they do, they gave us our money. And so I've always been of this mentality, like everything is an opportunity to me. And that's what the book, The Obstacle, is the way it's telling you. So people might see whatever is presented in front of them as a reason to do nothing. But we're just like, nah, we're going to hustle through it, man. And so that's what we did. And we kept promoting. People got mad at me. There's days when they're like, this is an organized protest day, Charles. You shouldn't be promoting. I was still out there promoting. I was like, okay, I'm my bills. And so at that point, my goal, and I always tell people, like, my goal in the beginning was just to make one sale a day. I was like, if I can get one sale a day, I've effectively replaced my day job for that day. And I was like, I just want to get to that point. And then I got really good at doing that. And I was like, all right, well, let's see if I can like make $1,000 a day. And then I started doing $1,000 a day. And I was like, this is kind of, then what happened is I took off time from work. And the reason why I took off time from work is because I reached out to Jeremy Johnson. And Jeremy, I was like, he posted something about how when he left his job, he knew that he would make a little bit less money temporarily, but he did it because he knew long term he would make even more money with the amount of time that he had away from his job. And so I did that. I took off time. And this is before all the other stuff, the pandemic stuff happened. I took off time in like February. And at that time, I just had the ability to run sale after sale after sale, promote throughout the day. And that's when I started really making money. Like my first week, I made like $8,000. I was like, oh, shoot, I made $8,000 in a week. This is crazy. And then the next week after that, I made like $13,000. I was like, what? And then I want to say the week after that, we started to get into March. And then I was doing like $40,000 a week, $50,000 a week. And then it started creeping up. And then I did like a few really, really good weeks. And then when the pandemic hit and I saw everybody got their stimulus, I went in. I ran a sale directly dedicated to the stimulus. I made like $40,000 in a day. And I was like, this is crazy. This is crazy. And I just kept my foot on the gas. And it just blew up. And at that point in time, this is when I had like a lot of money in the bank. And I knew we were buying a house. And so I knew I had to stay working because we were buying the house. But I knew I could afford, I knew I could technically afford to retire like indefinitely. If I just wanted to live out of my investments, I could retire for life, especially with the way we have it situated where the investments are paying for the mortgage. I got these other, I could really never work again. And so it really got tedious showing up to this job. And they have so many rules. You can't eat at your desk. You got to clock in and clock out for this. You have to send these daily reports in. Like, and I was driving very far to get to work. So I was driving like an hour to get to work, an hour to get back. And then you also have like managers who are kind of like micromanaging you. And it just got very, very tedious because I was continuing to run it up. And then not only that, now I'm making money off of the money that I invested. And so like the day that I really had gotten fed up was we had closed on that Monday. That very next day, I made like $30,000 in the stock market. And I was like, I was like, you better not say nothing to me. And I had to leave early because I had a meeting. Because I've been running two offices in the city for the longest time. So I was working out of one office now near Staples Center. And I had my own office on the north side of downtown LA. And I had to leave there to go have a conversation with somebody about getting the hotel deal because I'm trying to look at doing bigger deals. And I got an email and he's like, oh, Charles, you left it for 5 o'clock. And you also didn't submit your daily report, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you know what? We out. And it was a risk and I was scared. But this is just as recent as last week. Like literally Friday was supposed to be my last day. But between Black Friday and I think like Monday, Cyber Monday, Black Friday to Cyber Monday, I made my annual salary. And I was, this is crazy. Like I'm not going back. But what I tell people is that it's not so much just having the free time. It's also knowing that it's all on you. You only eat what you kill. But the thing is there's this inverse relationship. And when you have this job, you let time pass. You waste time, time that you could be spending making money. But when you don't have a job, you don't let that time go for granted. Every minute matters. And so you are hustling, you're investing, you're researching your own phone calls, you're setting meetings. And so in the beginning, that might look like you're not doing much, but it's going to catch up to you. Rashana Scott, her first year of not working, she quit her job last year. And I think one of the benefits is getting around a bunch of people who don't have jobs. And so Rashana, like she quit her job. And then this year, she's just going nuts. And so really, I'm not even focused on this year. This year, I'm kind of laying the groundwork for what's going to happen next year. But the sky is truly the limit. And like I said, getting around people like Jeremy doesn't have a job. Andre doesn't have a job. Eric doesn't have a job. And before I left, I actually had reached out to them and I had done paid consults with both Jeremy, Andre, and Erica. Even though they're my friends and I probably could have just got them on the phone for free, I still wanted to invest back in them. And so I was like, hey, I'll pay for the consult. Let's give them the phone call. And you're going to get the best of somebody too when you pay them. When you pay somebody,
You've always said that.
And so Jeremy and Andre kind of gave me like similar kind of opinions. And they were like, Andre said, you need to get a safe $10,000 of passive income. And I was like, all right, I could do that. And so I started factoring all the stuff that I have coming in. And then I think I might have created a few other things and ran up other things. And so I created a mastermind group. My mastermind group has, I want to say 200 people in it, probably more, maybe 250. Those 250 people pay me $20 a month. That's $5,000. We also created the Trade of the Week platform. The Trade of the Week platform is another $20 a week, a $20 a month subscription that has about 500 people in there. That's $10,000 in itself. We also got the rental properties. We also have the vending machines. And I'm not even including the money I can make on Gumroad and on through my actual investment community, because I've been learning that subscription businesses are good businesses, especially if it's a low fare subscription. And so at that point, I was like, yeah, we good. But I always seek advice. I'm always seeking people who are where I want to be and asking them how to get there. And so that's kind of what allowed me to do it. There was so much that went into it. But if you guys follow it from the beginning, just knowing that you got to start that business before you need that business. A lot of people, they're like, oh, well, I'm going to quit and start a business. And you know what's going to happen is you're going to be so stressed out, so like anxious, you're going to end up going back to the job. You can't even really serve your clients. And this is why, honestly, having the job helped, is because at that point in time, all the money that I was making, I didn't need it. And so I invested it because I could still live out of my salary. And then I got to the point where I created my own salary. And so that's kind of what you want to do. So even though I've created my own salary, I can still, that's why I don't count the Gumroad money or the LaunchPass money, because that's still only investment money. So the Gumroad money still goes into stocks. The LaunchPass money still goes into real estate and other passive income sources. And I just live out of the subscriptions that I have.
The dopest part about the entire story was like the relentlessness, the fearlessness, the commitment, like being committed to your wife, your family, your goals, like that's where people really needed to hear and like get in tune with. And it's so dope. And I'm glad you like went on that entire story and told them everything. Before we wrap up, because we're almost at time, just I know you're always good for a quote or something to give them the last little bit of advice you want to give, and you know, for all the listeners that are listening, of course, drop your Twitter, Instagram handle if they already don't know it. Anything that you, any subscriptions or plans that you have going on that you want to promote, give it all.
So I think the answer is focus on serving your people and less on getting white people to like you, because white folks are never going to like you, man. And they might respect you, but they're not going to like you. They're not going to put you above themselves. And I don't expect them to. I don't expect anybody to put me above themselves. So it's like respect is different. I don't think we're looking at white people to give us respect. We're looking at them to kind of like make us their pet. And I don't want to be nobody's pet, because we've seen time and time again, it's when they do it for you, you get the crumbs, you get the last of it. And what's going to happen is they're going to pivot on top of it and make it so you're still at a disadvantage. And so if we had more people who were building better homes in Black communities, creating great places for African-American tenants to live, creating affordable housing for them to do this, creating affordable courses for people to learn what we learned through college, like that is where you have this relationship where we all eat. I win, they win. I love it when I see somebody. I just interviewed somebody last night who turned $1,000 in options into $60,000 and then used that 60 grand to pay off all his debt. Or Kia Killey, who made $100,000 in options and then use that money to then pay off all his student loans and then to help his parents out. Like, that's what it's about. I gave my gift to the world. They get to improve their lives and I get to improve my life. And if more of us would do that, we would have less lack. What happens is we give all of our value to white folks. And yeah, we might improve our life, but it's a one-sided relationship. Now they're improving your life, their life, but we're only improving that one life. But if you take whatever you know and then give it to your people and focus on giving it to your people. If you have a degree in education, give it to your people. If you have a degree in taxation, if you're an accountant, if you're a lawyer, give it to your people. Add value to your people. And I guarantee you, you'll be blessed on the other side of that. And you'll make way more money than any white person would ever make you. And I don't dislike white people. I just realize we ain't on the same team. It's like, if I always liken races in America to sports. So it's like, we're out here, the Lakers, trying to get the Clippers to love us. Like, man, just pass us the ball sometime, man. We want to score some points too. Like, nah, like, I care about the Celtics and the Celtics only. And when you realize that, you can start making some LeBron James moves, getting, improving yourself, investing in yourself, bringing dope people around you. And then you could go out there and you could beat the Celtics instead of trying to get the Celtics to give you a win. They're going to ever give you a win. And I, like, again, I have no animosity towards anybody else. I'm just saying we've been trying it and it ain't working. But the people who would take my approach, it does work. One of my favorite phrases, I didn't get here doing blah, blah, blah. I love people. I got somewhere. That crazy mindset, it got me somewhere. That voting the way I vote, it got me somewhere. That not being the most likable person, it got me somewhere. And so it's important to hear what I say and just do it, not debate it and not tell me what's too hard. Like, just do it. I'm the coach. I'm the head coach. I'm just telling you to do it. So with that, my name is Charles Oglesby, also on the Tide Millionaire. You can find all of my content on at Tide Capital, Tide.capital, www.tidecapital.co. You can email me at info@capitaltide.com. You can check out our podcast. We have three. I have an options podcast called Options Conversations, which I think is really unique because there's not a lot of podcasts out there discussing options, specifically for African-American people. Also, the Tide Capital Millionaire podcast that has been changed to the Oglesby and Scott Show. And then we also have Tweet Talks. So if you want to hear me talk a lot of mess. We've been talking mess for about 77 episodes, and we got more coming. Jamal, I think, was on two episodes. I know he was at least on one, but he might have been on two episodes.
Yeah, I think we're up to three. I think I've been on three, actually.
So we're doing great things, man. We got good things planned for Jamal. You know, we'll get him over at Tide Capital in 2021, get him back at Chi Capital. I don't know how much money it's going to take, but hopefully we can afford him. And we're going to rent it up, man.
Yo, that's so funny you talked about that. Oh my God, that's so funny. But we definitely appreciate Charles coming on. Like I said, he's more than just someone I met on Twitter, on social media. I consider him a friend and a brother. I'm so happy for his progress. I'm looking forward to more of his progress because it inspires me to do better, which makes me give you guys better information because it makes me sharpen my skills and everything. I'm so grateful for the relationship that we built and this conversation that I'm going to be bringing to you guys via this recording. As usual, this has been an episode of The Culture's Money, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
That's right. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Culture's Money. You can follow Jamal on Instagram and Twitter at Leo Grand Prince. That's Leo Grand Prince. You can also get in contact with Jamal via Facebook and LinkedIn. Just type in his name. That's Jamal, J-A-M-A-A-L, Vitose, V-E-T-O-S-E. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time right here on The Culture's Money.